And welcome to another edition of Book Talk. I'm Stephen Ussery, and I'm delighted to have Judy Schachner on the program today. Judy is a best-selling artist and author of children's books. She's best known for her popular Skippy John Jones series, starring a Siamese kitten who thinks he's a chihuahua. She's also written many standalone books like Yo Vikings, Dewey Bob, and The Granny Man. Today we'll be talking about her latest standalone book, Sarabella's Thinking Cap, which is published by Dial Books. Now, Judy, in our last interview, you told us that a third grade boy had diagnosed you with ADD. Was that kind of the beginning of the Sarabella story?
Well, the beginning of the Sarabella story started when I was born, probably. And I was always sent home with notes that said, Judy needs to focus and finish her work on time. I mean, my editor still writes me those notes. But yeah, as a child, you know, my last good year in school, I think I said this before, was third grade. I failed math fourth grade on. And I had trouble learning and focusing, but I was a major daydreamer. All I wanted to do was go home and draw. I was drawing in school and make up stories. And then fast forward to having two daughters. My oldest daughter was an extrovert. I mean, she wanted to be a Viking and requested a Viking ship for her ninth birthday. And,
is that still in the front yard?
The only thing left of the Viking ship is the swirling tail. And I've taken that in. I planted that in my garden, as you know, out in front. That's hanging on my wall now. But Emma, who was a fox for the first 8 years of her life until she discovered the Viking explorers and their dragon-headed ships, she was an extrovert. You have to be an extrovert if you're Viking. And Sarah, her younger sister, was the introvert. And teachers never understood how she took in information and learned, and they always were concerned at the beginning of the year that she's going to struggle and she's going to have to stay back. Well, the truth of the matter is that Sarah always did very well in school. I didn't, but she did. But she had an unusual way of learning, and I didn't worry about it too much because her way of looking at things was very similar to the way I looked at things. She could see too many possibilities, too many answers to one question. So she spent an awful lot of time in her room making things, really intricate games. She wrote a thesaurus. She would make jointed little ballerinas, really intricate things. She bound little books and wrote stories. But you wouldn't actually know that she had all of that in her because she was quiet. And I think many, many teachers, parents even, don't always know what goes on in the mind of the ones, the children who are introverts. And so that's kind of where it's Sarabella is a combination of me and my daughter, Sarah.
Was Sarah named Sarabella, or did you pick that because it sounds like cerebellum, as in the brain?
You got it. I mean, I did call her Sarabella. It's a nickname, but the whole cerebellum connection was totally there. Sarabella, cerebellum.
Sarabella in the book, her teacher, Mr. Fantozzi.
Fantozzi, yeah.
Fantozzi. Sends home notes, which Sarah is not happy with.
Right.
But the notes are fun.
Mm-hmm.
Were those notes you were your notes that you got or Sarah got, your daughter got, or did you have to make those up?
Most of my notes were not as fun. The first one at the top of the page, though, where it says Sarabella needs to focus and finish her work on time every day, that is actually from my report card. I just whited out my name and wrote in Sarabella, and then whited out my teacher's name, M. Wilson, and wrote in Mr. Fantozzi's name. But I made up the other notes. The thing about that particular page, and I'm glad you brought that up, is I was very fortunate to have two parents who, or maybe, I don't know if it's fortunate or not, they didn't have high expectations for me. I think, you know, my mom loved being a mother, and I think wanted that for me. Talk of going to college never came up. They probably thought I wasn't ever a candidate, number one. But my parents, I brought home D's and F's all the time. And most important to them, well, did you try hard enough? Did you try hard? Yeah, I don't think I was truthful. I wasn't interested in so much that was taught in school. And creativity during when dinosaurs roamed the earth was not really, you know, they didn't focus on that in school. It was reading, writing, arithmetic. And there wasn't a place for somebody like me. But my parents never made me feel terrible for my bad grades. And when I had kids, that made me feel, remembering that made me feel good because I'm not a failure in life. You know, I've had a successful life. So it made me relaxed as a parent that, you know, you are not the sum total of your grades. I mean, if you were to look at me on paper, you wouldn't bet on me, you know, as a horse that would win the race.
Did you have a bear that was supposed to help you with your math facts?
I wish I did have a bear, although I had other things. Mostly they were, I think we talked about this the last time, Stephen, where I was raised on old movies. I loved writing about fancy women in ball gowns that would give up their life in Hollywood for the convent. You know, I was raised in an Irish Catholic home. So all my stories, they all went into the all the women went into the convent and had, you know, very chaste lives. And then they would get tuberculosis and fall in love with a rich English doctor. I mean, I was writing this at eight years old because I saw the movie The Nun Story with Audrey Hepburn. And she was a beautiful nun. She did get tuberculosis, and she did fall in love with a very handsome British doctor. So at eight, I was writing all of these insane stories. And let's fast forward. A few years ago at BEA, I was, you know, on the author strands where they put the authors out, and then, you know, the people wait in line to get their book signed. Guess who I was sitting next to? I was sitting next to a nun, which made me very happy. She was wearing a black and white habit, full habit. I was wearing black and white, too, which was sort of extraordinary. But also the fact she was Dolores Hart, and she was a Hollywood star, and she was Elvis Presley's former girlfriend.
Oh, wow.
So all the stories that I was creating at an eight-year-old was sitting, you know, right next to me in the body of Dolores Hart.
Now, there is a common thread between Skippy John Jones, your iconic character, mm-hmm. and Sarabella, and they both have very vivid imaginations.
Yes. Imagination, I think when I look at all of my books, almost every book has something to do with imagination, including if you go way back to my story about my great-grandmother, Annie Burns, who was a cook for Ralph Waldo Emerson. She came over from Ireland when she was 18 years old, and she ended up in Concord working for the Emerson family. And my idea in that book was that here's an Irish girl, you know, escaping famine and kind of had a hard-bitten life, and she has to cook for a man who has an extraordinary imagination and is so full of the beauty of the world that she doesn't know if she can feed this man with, you know, her meat and potatoes attitude. And what her mother reminds her of is, you know, you once made recipes out of snow and water and flower petals and, you know, as all children do, that's the way you have to cook for Mr. Emerson. So I look back and most of my stories, except for my cat, well, my real cat stories like The Granny Man and Bits and Pieces, have a lot of the theme of imagination is important. And for me, it's so important because it represents the possibilities of your, in all those little corners of your mind are so exciting. The anticipation of, like, let's say the anticipation of Christmas, the anticipation is the most exciting thing. The disappointment is when you actually open your presents, or I don't mean to sound like an ingrate. I'm just saying anticipation is just so juicy. And so the fact that, you know, our imaginations hold our future, hold our dreams and all the possibilities of wonderful things happening. So Sarabella and Skippy do have a lot in common. Of course, Skippy, you know, goes into his little closet where he can just let himself be himself. And Sarah is kind of locked in her mind and needs a way out to share those thoughts.
So how did you come up with the style of art for Sarabella's thoughts? How did you decide to go collage?
Well, I've always used collage in my books. If you look at all the Skippy books have collage in them, my Going Back to Yo Vikings, this collage in that book. And then I did a book, I don't even know what book I was on tour for when we talked.
It was Snow White.
It was Snow White. Okay, yeah. Well, after Snow White, I
Is
may
it
have
Dewey
done,
Bob or?
Well, there may have been Bits and Pieces, and then there was Dewey Bob. And Dewey Bob Crockett, who was probably
from Tennessee,
born in the pocket of an old pair of pants. I did a lot of collage in that. I love collage. And so with Sarabella, I probably will always continue to use collage in my art, but Sarabella I was able to, probably not as much as I used in Dewey, but certainly when there you have that big thought bubble where she has all of those thoughts, you know, expressed on the page. I used a lot of old prints and actually drawings from my own daughter, Sarabella. And then when she gets to make her thinking cap on the brown paper bag, you know, she cuts and clips and pastes and paints and draws. And so collage is just something I love to use.
And you have your own thinking cap that's on the back flap of the book.
I have many thinking caps.
But could you tell us about the one that has the kitty boy on?
Yes. You know, this book has been in the works in my mind for a long, long time. I do character Bibles, which I brought one with me. But they're my thinking cap within the pages of a journal. So I just collage and paint and draw and write sentences. There's not a whole lot of writing that goes on. But in the middle of doing that, I started making my own thinking caps out of paper bags and putting things on them that I love to think about. You know, I lost my mom when I was 15 years old, so there's a picture of my mom with me sitting on her lap. My daughters are both on the thinking cap as they looked when they were little. Emma was a Viking, and Sarah had little wings. And the cap has a Siamese cat right front and center. There's a wishbone, a chicken wishbone. I love birds. I love buttons. I love trees. All of those things I've painted or, you know, collaged onto the thinking cap. And I used to wear it when I would visit some schools. And then I started making more of them. I love to make them, actually. So my idea was, gosh, wouldn't it be wonderful for kids, especially the introverts, to express what they think most deeply inside. And you know, if you want to share it, you just have to wear it. And then we'd look at one another and say, hey, you know, we have a lot in common. You know what I mean? So yeah, the thinking caps I love to make. And my husband told me, back in Philadelphia, he called me last night and he said, you just got a letter from a teacher who read Sarabella to her class and they all made thinking caps. And she sent photographs of all the thinking caps. And he said, they're quite beautiful. So the thought of children all around the country wearing thinking caps and, you know, putting their thoughts on the outside, wearing your heart on your sleeve is kind of a lovely dimension to doing this book.
And you mentioned that the story had been with you for quite some time.
Yeah.
When that idea sits with you and you don't act on it immediately, is there a tension or a pressure that builds up, or are you able just to let it simmer in the background?
I'm very good at simmering. I burnt a few pots. But yes, I think I really started to think about this book probably 7-8 years ago when I started one of my character Bibles. And I actually, you know, I didn't sit down and actually write out the story at that point. And I knew it wasn't ready. My editor knew it wasn't ready. So I moved on to other books. I had to get this one just right. And I don't even know if I did get it right. I'm never really happy with my books. They never come out the way I want them to, both art-wise and word-wise. But I think, you know, it was like, a year ago, and my editor, Lucia Monfried, said, well, what are you going to do next? And I said, well, I don't know. And she said, why don't you do Sarabella? And I did. And, oh, my gosh, I had the most wonderful time doing it. Of course, I always come close to death before I finish a book. But
what happened this time?
I think I was just more serious about it. I've been doing, as I mentioned before, these character Bibles, which I do a lot of collaging. And I just sort of get rid of all of these images in my head. I never know, there's no beginning or middle or ending to these journals that I do, but they're free-form piggy banks where, you know, I deposit inspiration every day. You may look at them and think, well, you didn't put that in the book, or it has not. But something will tip me off to an idea, a sentence, or an image. And if you were to look at them, you would see, oh, I see where that's going. And I'm able to take those journals and sit down with my editor and say, well, this is kind of the way I want it to go. And she's, you know, go for it. So I think I just made a lot of it, you know, I've been doing this for like 26 years now. And I'm never terribly confident, but over the years I've become more confident. And instead of just saying, do you think I should do a book about the granny man? You know, now it's like, no, this is what I want to do. And also I think having Sarabella grow up and, you know, become the young woman she is and me becoming the old woman that I am, there is a lot to write about.
So how do you stay connected to that child's state of mind in order to write this?
Such an easy answer. I am a professional 8-year-old.
Well, where does one sign up for that job?
In your second childhood. I mean, you have to have that little bridge. The bridge from childhood to adulthood never really happened for me. It just was like, you know, it just a steady walk into never leaving. I'm a silly person, really, with deep thoughts, but silly deep thoughts. And I guess the fortunate thing is I didn't have an easy childhood. My mom was sick for most of my life. We didn't have a lot of money. It was a struggle. It was a struggle for me to feel good about myself when I was always the failing student in the class. But my imagination was the saving grace of my life, you know, and I was allowed to take shelf paper and pencils and just draw myself into all kinds of stories. That was my escape. And I couldn't, you know, aside from wanting to be a nurse because I took care of my mother and, you know, when you watch somebody suffer so greatly, you know, my mom's last words to me were, Judy should be a nurse. And I couldn't be a nurse because you wouldn't want me giving you medicine because
my math
wasn't so hot. So that was never going to happen. And in high school, I said to my counselor when she said, Judy, what are you going to do? When I said, I'm going to nursing school. She said, well, you have to take all of your math courses over from fourth grade on. She said, I don't think that's the right choice for you, but you're always in the art room drawing. And so I'm just lucky that somebody like me with huge deficits in most other areas of my life, you don't ever want me near your checkbook. My husband has sent me to the bank twice to do some major transactions. I begged him not to because I knew something would go wrong, and something majorly did go wrong because I just canceled a mortgage that we took out. Right? How did it go, Judy? Oh, fine. It was easy. Anyway, you don't want me near money. But I'm lucky that I can do what I can do. Otherwise, I'd be a really terrific waitress. I was a good waitress.
Now, the last time we spoke, you'd mentioned how you imagine accents for your characters as you're making them. And I was wondering what kind of accents Sarabella and her family have.
Well, if we go back to my childhood, then we have a wicked hardcore Boston accent. But Sarabella's from Philadelphia, so there's no true exciting accents in it. Though, the whale, I did record this book. There is a recording somewhere out there that Penguin has placed somewhere. But the whale is British.
And are you still working with your husband and recording the books?
I do. We go in, you know, go into Philly. It's where he works. And it's great that I can work with him because then I don't have to feel foolish when I'm barking like a chihuahua, although I kind of do. It's like, look the other way. So, yeah, he does record me.
Now, for standalone books like Yo Vikings and Sarabella, do those take longer to come together as a complete project as opposed to a Skippy John that's got like an established universe to it?
Yeah, Skippy's a pretty, you know, now they're formulaic. I mean, Skippy goes into his closet. I know that there has to be a problem set up. Skippy goes into his closet and, you know, there's something happens in there. So, yeah, those are basic for me now. Writing a standalone book, well, you know, like when I wrote Bits and Pieces, that's based on a true story. My old cat, who was senile and deaf, left home one day after licking a stick of butter. And we didn't see him again for almost a whole week. And I thought that was it. He would never come back. He was sleeping in the tire. And two little girls on silver scooters found him. How'd they find him? They were walking by a house and there was a real commotion outside. Their very words. And I had to drop everything and just say, I've got to write this book because it wrote itself. And yes, he was standing in a rubber tire like Rin Tin Tin. And all that conversation with the little kids around him, you know, saying, where did he come from? He came from the tire. Ooh, it's like a miracle. You know, it was of biblical proportions. That just happened that way. And that was so easy to write. And then Dewey Bob, when I get an idea in my head or a character in my head, they speak to me. And Dewey was this sweet little southern raccoon who you know, gave his heart to this little mud ball that he found. I loved writing that story because I love becoming these characters.
I remember when we last spoke, you were talking about Dewey Bob, and he hadn't made his entrance into the world yet, right. But you'd hope that he might become a series. Is there going to be another Dewey Bob book?
Maybe, but it's an interesting thing. Dewey Bob is a storybook. Sometimes people think that storybooks, it has a lot of text or more text, even though I didn't think it was incredibly long, but I thought it could be another, I could always do another story. I mean, I think Penguin would be fine with that, but you never know what is going to catch on. Like when Skippy, the first Skippy came out, it just caught on like wildfire. And I'm like, you have to do another one. Dewey's a softer, quieter book and also requires patience to read it. And, you know, I don't know.
Well, how was that experience for you in making the book since it had more text than normal?
And I don't even see it as having, you know, a lot of text. I mean, in reality, I guess they say the rules now, like writing a picture book, they look for books that maybe are, you know, 500 to 800 words. I'm incapable of writing. I suppose I could if I put my mind to it, but I love stories. And growing up, I loved storybooks. I love the fact that a child can sit on your lap and you can get lost in a story. And I try to put a lot in the pictures so that those who can't read have a lot to look at. So somebody said that Sarabella had a long text. I don't even think. I mean, there's a little bit more explanation, a few more words in towards the end of the book to explain things. But I'm like, what do you want? You know?
But you also very cleverly sneak text into the pictures.
I'm more of an intuitive creator of books. My editor said, you're the most intuitive, you know, person I've ever worked with. And I think that was a nice way of saying that she doesn't understand what I'm doing. But whatever I do is just, I'm not planning, I'm not writing to what's trendy, what's happening right now. I just write whatever comes into my heart. I put it out there. If it happens to have a little few more words than, you know, the 800 or 500 words that publishers are looking for now. Because, you know, I think for me, picture books are so important. I don't want to create a book that is just made to read once and then there's nothing to go back to. And I think frequently books are put out and there's just nothing for a kid to return to again and again and again. So I think storybooks fill a place between toddler books and between, you know, the early chapter books. But I also feel that picture books should be used in high school as vehicles to, you know, to learn how to write. I never expected to write. It was terrible in English. Still am. But when I read picture books to my daughters when I was in my 30s, that's how I learned to write. You know, when you read historical biographies, or if I took my first book, Willie and May, which was about my great Aunt May, without the pictures, it's a personal essay. So I just, you know, I don't know what I'm talking about right now. I think I've like gone down a little boat.
Well, but I think it's an important point then when you say you don't necessarily fit these formulas they might have for picture books. And in that, and with your intuition, that is closer to what art is than following formulas.
And I'm grateful that I'm allowed to do that. You know, I'm very great. I don't know if another editor would take me on. You know, my editor has just been, I was just saying it to one of my Penguin reps today that, yeah, I'm very fortunate that I have an editor who just like kind of lets me go. And she's so supportive of me. And Penguin as a publishing house has been too. I don't know if I could find this home nowadays. I'm most grateful for the freedom that they have given me. Most grateful. I love them.
Sarabella's older sister in the book, Cece, mm-hmm. has fox ears. Was that like Emma's foxes?
Yes, exactly. And I, that page, I love the questions you're asking, by the way. I love that page so much because Emma was the extrovert. Emma was, things came easy to Emma. And when Emma, you know, when Sarah said, I wish I could focus, and Cece, her sister, says, it's easy. Just take deep breaths and squint. And I had just read a book on genius, The Geography of Genius, where squinting and focusing was actually a part of, you know, how do things come into focus? And squinting, of course, you know, we squint all the time. So to me, it was really logical information that she was giving her sister, which of course she, you know, she hyperventilated the next day, breathing too much. And then she was squinting all day long, which probably in my head made her teacher say, you need to go to the nurse's office to have your eyes examined. But yes, that's her sister who always wore fox ears and looks most, you know, I wasn't trying to do portraits of anybody in the book. I mean, sure, it's based on our family, but Emma came out looking just like Emma does in real life. when she was a little girl.
So what's next up on the drawing board for you?
Stretchy McHansom. Stretchy McHansom. The McHansom clan was lively and large. They lived in a box with no one in charge. So it's about a group of redheaded feral cats. And, you know, the McHansom clan, Jamie McHansom wears a kilt. And basically they're wild and woolly and rough and tumbly. And Stretchy is just like him, except that he just wants something more. He wants a lap. So he goes out in search of a lap. And he finds it in a little girl. He finds Abigail Bright, who is, they were meant for each other. They were unusually right. And that's what I've done another character Bible. I showed it to my editor and I said, this is the McHansom clan, Stretchy McHansom. He's stretchy and handsome. It's all in rhyme, which I've never done a book totally in rhyme. And I'm having a blast doing it. So now I have to go home and actually write it and paint it.
And cats do populate your books pretty heavily. There's a cat named Pinky in Sarabella's. While Sarabella has these grand visions and daydreams that span the world and every topic available, Pinky likes fish. And that's maybe freshwater and saltwater fish, but it's almost always fish he's thinking about.
I love you so much for the detail you have picked up in this book. And thank you for that. But yes, I love reading this to little kids because the real little ones who aren't even in school yet, I always bring up, and what does Pinky think about? And they're like, fish! Like, they get a charge out of the fact that Pinky thinks of fish all throughout. And of course, Pinky sometimes is doing his laundry, and he stops in the middle of it, and he's thinking of fish. And what do you think, Pinky? And Pinky's dangling as Sarabella's, like, practically choking him as she's holding him, and he's got fish on his mind. So I love doing those little visual jokes. There's never a word about them. But some child, such as yourself, looks at them and gets a little chuckle out of.
Well, if you're a professional 8-year-old, I'm an amateur 3-year-old.
Oh, good. Good.
Well, Judy, I want to thank you so much for taking a few minutes and talking with us this weekend. It's been a lot of fun to catch up with you.
Oh, it's been the most fun thing ever. I'll talk to you anytime.
Judy Schachner is the author of Sarabella's Thinking Cap, which is published by Dial. Please visit the Book Talk blog at wyplbooktalk.podbean.com to see a video of Judy showing me her character Bible for Sarabella. wyplbooktalk.podbean.com. I'm Stephen Ussery, and this is Book Talk.
Thank you for joining us today. Book Talk is recorded in the studios of WYPL in Memphis, Tennessee. If you have any questions or comments, you can email us at wyplfm@gmail.com. Or write to us at Book Talk, care of WYPL, 3030 Poplar Avenue, Memphis, Tennessee, 38111. Or call us at 901-415-2752.
This recording of Book Talk is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 3.0 license for the United States. You are free to share, copy, distribute, or display and perform this work. But there are restrictions. Nothing in this license impairs or restricts WYPL's moral rights. Thank you for listening to Book Talk.